Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Mario Ritter, Jr. This program is designed for English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Coming up on the show, Andrew Smith brings us Ask a Teacher. He answers a question from Tayyab in Pakistan about a form of the verb be. We also hear the Everyday Grammar Report from Ashley Thompson and Jonathan Evans. They explain the difference between the simple past and the present perfect verb tenses. And we close our show with the program American Stories. But first,
the 36-year-old Peruvian artist Sadit Silvano makes creations born of ancient songs. Brush in hand, eyes on the cloth, the Peruvian woman paints as she sings. And through her voice, her ancestors speak. When we paint, we listen to the inspiration that comes from the music and connect to nature, to our elders, said Silvano. The artist now lives and works in Lima, Peru, where she moved 20 years ago from Paoyan. It is a Shipibo Conibo indigenous community located in the Amazon. These pieces are sacred, she added. We bless our work with the energy of our songs. Official data says close to 33,000 Shipibo Conibo people live in Peru. They are believed to come from the surroundings of the Yacali River. Many moved to urban areas like Cantagallo, the Lima neighborhood where Silvano lives. Hand-painted textiles like the ones she makes have slowly gained recognition. Known as Kene, these works were declared part of the cultural heritage of the nation by the Peruvian government in 2008. Each kene is special, Shipibo craftswomen say. Every design speaks of a woman's community, her worldview, and beliefs. Every design tells a story, Silvano said while dressed in traditional clothing. It is a way in which a Shipibo woman distinguishes herself. Paoyan, where Silvano was born, is far from Lima. To get there requires an airplane flight and a 12-hour boat trip. In her hometown, locals rarely speak languages other than Shipibo. Doors and windows there have no locks. Adela Sampaio, a 48-year-old healer who was born not too far from Paoyan, moved to Cantagallo in 2000. But she says that all her skills come from the Amazon River area. Since I was a little girl, my mom treated me with traditional medicine, said Sampaio. She gave me plants to become stronger, to avoid getting sick, to be courageous, she added. That's how the energy of the plants started growing inside me. Sampaio, too, communicates her worldview through her textiles. Though she does not paint, she embroiders, and each thread tells a tale from home. Each plant has a spirit, said the healer, pointing to the leaves embroidered in the cloth. And medicinal plants come from God. The plants painted by Silvano also bear meaning. One of them represents pure love. Another represents a wise man. And another, a serpent. The anaconda is special for us, Silvano said. It's our protector, like a god that cares for us and provides food and water. In ancient times, she said, her people believed that the sun was their father and the anacondas were their guardians. Colonization brought Catholicism, and their worldview changed. Nowadays we have different religions, but we respect our other beliefs too, Silvano said. For many years, after her father took her to Lima hoping for a better future, she thought of her time in the jungle. Life in Paoyan was not easy, but she learned to be strong at a young age. When we encounter difficult times, we overcome them with our therapy, designing, painting, singing, Silvano said. We have a song that is melodic and heals our soul, and another one that is inspiring and brings us joy. Few Shipibo girls are told to study or make a living of their own, Silvano said. Instead, they are taught to wait for a husband. And once married, they are taught to deal with problems, difficulties, or bad treatment. Even though we suffer, people tell us, take it, he's the father of your children. Take it, he is your husband, Silvano said. But deep inside, we are wounded. So what do? We sing. The lesson is taught by mothers to daughters. If you are hurt at home, grab your cloth, your brush, and leave. Go far away, alone, and sit. Connect with your kane and paint. And while you paint, sing. That's our healing, Silvano said. Through our songs, our kanes, we are free. I'm John Russell.
This week's episode of Everyday Grammar, we're going to help you understand the difference between the simple past and the present perfect. English learners often confuse these two verb tenses. Let's start with an example. Can you tell the difference between these two sentences? Sentence 1. I saw the movie. Sentence 2. I have seen the movie.
Sentence 1 uses the simple past tense. Sentence 2 uses the present perfect tense. I saw the movie and I have seen the movie both refer to an action that was finished in the past. But there is one important difference. I saw the movie suggests that you saw the movie at a past. I have seen the movie suggests that you saw the movie at an unknown time in the past.
Use the simple past to talk about a finished action that happened at a specific time. For example, I went out with my friends last night. The adverb last night is not required, but it does help clarify that the event happened at a specific time.
That's the easy part. Now let's talk about the present perfect. You form the present perfect by using have or has, followed by the past participle form of the verb. For example, I have graduated from college. The present perfect confuses English learners because it refers to a past action. It is also called present perfect because speakers use it to stress the importance of a past event in the present. The sentence, "I have graduated from college," emphasizes the present effect of a past event, graduation. The exact time of the graduation is not important.
There are four more common situations that require the present perfect. First, it can express a repeated action. When an action happened more than one time in the past, use the present perfect. For example, I have seen the movie three times. Second, it is common to use the present perfect with the words for and since. For and since are adverbs that tell about the duration of an activity. They answer the question, how long? For example, I have studied English for a long time.
Third, the negative adverb never requires the present perfect. You can say, I have never been to France. You would not say, I did never go to France. Finally, when asking a question in the present perfect, use ever, as in, have you ever won the lottery?
Here's a tip. Pay close attention to adverbs. Adverbs give hints or clues about which verb tense you should use.
A good way to practice the present perfect is to ask an English-speaking friend if he or she has ever done something. Have you ever flown in an airplane? Or, have you ever seen the Grand Canyon? I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Jonathan Evans.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Tayab in Pakistan about a form of the verb be in English. Dear teacher, I am always confused when it comes to the usage of being. Thank you, Tayab. I'm happy to answer this question, Tayab. Let's start by considering a basic way we use the verb be in English. We commonly use this verb to link or join a subject with its description. The description will often be a noun or an adjective. The following two examples show this.
That man is a farmer. That man is rich.
Expanding on this use of the verb be, we can call a description of how a person feels and experiences his or her life as a state of being. A state of being can last for a short or a long time. However, a state of being is longer than a momentary feeling. The following examples show this usage.
In retirement, her state of being became more relaxed. His state of being has not been good in recent months.
We can also use the word being to begin a description. This can help us describe something or someone in one sentence instead of two. For example, we could use two sentences to describe a man who does not speak very much with other people.
Mr. Jones was someone who spoke very little. He sat quietly while others did the talking.
But if we use the word being, we can express this idea in one sentence, as in the following example.
Being a man of few words, Mr. Jones sat quietly while others did the talking.
Here is another example of changing a description from two sentences to one sentence.
Manute was very tall. That is why he decided to play basketball instead of football. Being very tall, Minute decided to play basketball instead of football.
We can also use the word being combined with the noun or adjective that follows it as the subject of a sentence. Consider the following examples.
Being a parent has helped me better understand my own parents. Being open to criticism will help you improve your work.
In these examples, the phrases being a parent and being open to criticism are the subjects of the sentences. Lastly, we can use the word being as a noun to describe a highly intelligent form of life. Humans are beings, and somewhere in the universe, other intelligent beings might exist. For our readers and listeners, what are your questions about American English? We'd like to hear from you. Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And please include where you are from in your email, too. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Andrew Smith.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Now, the Learning English Program, American Stories.
Today's story is How the Animals Lost Their Tails and Got Them Back, Traveling from Philadelphia to Medicine Hat. It appeared in the book Rutabaga Stories by Carl Sandburg, published in 1922. Sandburg was a very famous American poet. He wrote Rutabaga Stories for his three daughters, Margaret, Janet, and Helga. The stories make liberal use of repetition and nonsense language, a fun form of wordplay. Listen closely to the language of this story about talking animals with a big problem.
Far up in North America, near the Saskatchewan River and Winnipeg wheat country, not far from the town of Moose Jaw, where nobody works unless they have to, and they nearly all have to, there is a place known as Medicine Hat. There, on top of a high tower, in a high chair, sits the head spotter of the Weathermakers. When the animals lost their tails, it was because the head spotter got careless. You see, the tails of the animals were hard and dry because of a stretch of hot, dusty weather. Then, at last, came a rain. It poured down on the animals' tails and softened them. But then a cold wind came and froze all the tails solid. A big wind followed and blew and blew and blew until all the animals' tails flew off their bodies. It was easy for the hogs with their short tails, but it was not so easy for the blue fox, who uses his tail to run and to write secret letters in the snow. It was easy for the rabbit and her little white tail, but it was hard for the yellow flongbu, who lights up her home in the hollow tree with her bright tail. The animals decided to choose a committee of representatives to represent them in parley-hoo, to see what steps could be taken by talking to do something. There were 66 representatives on the committee. They decided to call it the Committee of 66. For a chairperson, they picked the top flongbu. When there was a fight among the flongbu families, she was the one who would say who was right and who was wrong. She was from Chappaquiddick and lived there in a horse chestnut tree between South Hadley and Northampton. After her nomination and election, she brought the Committee of 66 to order. "It is no picnic to lose your tail, and we are here for business," she said, banging the gavel. Then a blue fox from Waco, Texas, stood up and said, "Madam Chairwoman, do I have the floor?" That is a way of saying, "May I speak?" "I make a motion," said the blue fox. "I move that this committee get on a train at Philadelphia and ride on the train until it stops, and then take another train until we get to Medicine Hat, where the head spotter of the Weathermakers sits. There we will ask if he will bring back our tails." The chairwoman said, "All in favor of the motion will clean their right ears with their right paws." And all the blue foxes and yellow flongbus began cleaning their right ears with their right paws. "All who oppose the motion will clean their left ears with their left paws," said the chairwoman. And all the blue foxes and yellow flongbus began cleaning their left ears with their left paws. "The motion is carried both ways. It's a razzmatazz," said the chairwoman. "Once again, all in favor of the motion will stand up on their toes." And all the blue foxes and all the yellow flongbus stood up. "And now," said the chairwoman, "all who are against the motion will stand on the top of their heads, stick their hind legs up in the air, and make a noise like woof woof." No one opposed the motion. "The motion is carried," said the chairwoman. So the committee went to Philadelphia to get the train to Medicine Hat. The chairwoman asked a policeman there, "Would you be so kind as to tell us the way to the Union Depot?" "It pays to be polite," said the policeman. "May I ask you again if you would kindly direct us to the Union Depot where the train is?" asked the flongbu again. "Polite persons and angry persons are different kinds," said the policeman. The flongbu's eyes changed their light, and a slow fire burned from where her tail used to be. She said, "Sir, I must inform you that we are the Committee of 66. We are distinguished representatives from places you do not know. This committee is going to ride to Medicine Hat with a special message and a secret errand for the head spotter of the Weathermakers. I am a polite friend of all respectable people," said the policeman, touching the star on his chest. This is the first time ever in the history of the United States that a committee of 66 has ever visited a city in the United States, said the Flongbu. I beg to be mistaken, finished the policeman. The Union Depot is under that clock, and he pointed to a big clock nearby. Over to Union Depot train station they went, all 66, half foxes, half Flongbus. They are speaking in some strange language from where they come from, said one passenger. They have secrets to keep among each other and never tell us, said another passenger. We will find out all about it in the newspapers tomorrow, said a third passenger. Then the foxes and Flongbus climbed into a special car. The train left the station. It came to the horseshoe curve near Altoona, where the tracks bend in a half circle. Then it went on toward Ohio. Two baby blue foxes, the youngest on the committee, sat at the front of the car. Crossing Ohio and Indiana at night, the Flongbus took off the top of the car. The conductor told them, I must have an explanation. It is between us and the stars, they told him. The train ran on to Chicago. There were pictures in the newspapers that afternoon showing foxes and Flongbus eating pink ice cream with iron axes. Each blue fox and yellow Flongbu got their own newspaper. Crossing to the north, the sky began to fill with the snow ghosts of Minnesota. Again, the foxes and Flongbus lifted the top off the car so they would not miss the show. Some went to sleep, but the two baby blue foxes stayed up, watching the snow ghosts and telling snow ghost stories to each other. Early in the night, the first baby blue fox said to the second, Who are the snow ghosts the ghosts of? The second baby blue fox answered, Snowmen, snow foxes, and snow fishes. Everybody has a snow ghost. And that was only the beginning of their talk. They would talk until morning about where the snow ghosts go on Christmas morning and how the snow ghosts watch the new year. Somewhere between Winnipeg and Moose Jaw, they stopped the train and all ran out in the snow. The white moon was shining down a valley of birch trees. At last they came to Medicine Hat, near the Saskatchewan River in Winnipeg wheat country, not far from the town of Moose Jaw, where nobody works unless they have to, and they nearly all have to. There they ran to the place where the head spotter of the weathermakers sits, in a high chair, on a high tower, watching the weather. Let loose another big wind to blow back our tails. Let loose a big freeze to freeze our tails back on. And let us get back our lost tails, they said to the head spotter. Which was just what he did, giving them exactly what they wanted. So they all went back home satisfied.
And that's our show for today. But join us again tomorrow to keep learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver.